Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family healthcare plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare? We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. It's Friday, April 22nd, 2016, and this is the last word. It's 3:02 p.m. My name is Michael Lawson, and happy birthday, Valerie, to my cousin Valerie. And I know she's saying happy birthday to me because my birthday is tomorrow. Normally, I would not be having this show on my birthday. Normally I wouldn't be. But there is a reason. And that's because we lost one of the all-time greatest artists that ever lived. Prince, we lost him yesterday morning. I mean, Purple Rain and all. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's Prince is a person, not, you know, there are some people, what is going on there? I must have got something mixed up in there. I don't know what that was. But anyway, we have this is a man who was not only a singer, who sang it all, is not only a song writer, a song producer, a man that played over 27 instruments. 27 instruments. How the heck? I can't even name 27 instruments. Good afternoon, Mr. Fortenberry.
Hello, sir.
I can't name 27 instruments.
Phenomenal, yes. He's a prodigy.
I mean, he built that huge facility out there, Paisley Park in Minnesota, and he had a sound studio there that rivaled anything they had at Warner Brothers where he first was at. He would play every instrument. How the heck is that even possible? He would play all the vocals. It would be him singing.
Yep.
And the only time you heard other people was when he went on the road on a tour.
So, yeah, and that's one of the things that confused me. You know, when I first saw him a couple of times, he was have these different bands up there, and I was like, oh, he sure changes bands a lot, you know. You'd see his different backers, you know. And I thought, wow, you know, he's kind of some egotistical guy who fires a lot of band members and hires new people all the time. And then I learned later, he does everything. Everything you hear on those recordings is him. He plays every instrument. He does every vocal, does everything, records it all, lays down all the tracks, arranges it all. Then he just goes on and hires session musicians to play when they're live. Yeah, it's just it's insane.
I mean,
immense talent.
Give me a
staggering
break
talent. Yeah.
I mean, so no wonder you go to his place at Paisley Park for a show with him, the show wouldn't start till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just 3 o'clock in the morning is when the show would start. But we're going to be paying a little tribute to Prince. Matter of fact, my oldest daughter, Janine, she liked Michael Jackson too, because, you know, they were rivals, sort of. But she had one wall in her room painted purple.
Wow.
She wanted her book covers purple. What kind of birthday cake you want? Purple. She had purple everything. I said, this is ridiculous. I'm going to play a little something here for Prince. Not the thing that got him started, but this is another one during the genre when he was making it big. It's called Cream.
Express train to Tacoma, Portland, Seattle, Spokane, now boarding on track 17.
I can't go to Minneapolis.
What's that, a Greek restaurant? And why are you dressed like this?
I like the way I'm dressed. Besides, that's what Prince likes.
Who's this Prince?
Prince! Do you have any new plans for movies?
You think your music can change the world?
Are you in love?
Do you consider yourself a modern-day Mozart?
It's true both of you are having an affair with Prince.
Yeah. No.
Yes.
I'll have a cream soda.
I'll have the fresh strawberries with cream.
Oh, I'm dying for something
great. Oh, he wants some of yours, but not some of mine. I see.
This is the final boarding call on the express train to Minneapolis, now leaving on track 26.
Hey!
cause you are the best.
Yes, you are. Cream. Get on top. Cream. You will cut. Cream. Don't just stop. Cream. Sugar gets hot. Look up in the air. It's your guitar.
Was Cream. That was one of his songs, and he wrote 39 albums. He published 39 albums. And according to what we're hearing now, is he has to be one of the most prolific songwriter producers ever in the business of music.
Yep.
Because one, if he's playing all these instruments, or is he sleeping?
Yeah.
And two, he said that when he finished publishing an album, the next day he was writing another album.
Right.
So before the other, no, I should say published, when one was finished and before it was published, by the time it was published, he was already working on another album.
Yep.
Then they said there's at least 900 songs we don't know that he ever did yet.
Yeah, he supposedly has a bunch in a vault that he's never allowed anybody to see, and then he's got a bunch more with the different various studios that he's worked with over the years and the different companies that, you know, they right. have holding. And then, of course, a lot of his albums, like, you know, Sign of the Times, for instance, when he originally right. conceived of it, he had two separate projects going. Then he fused them into a single project, Sign of the Times, and created a triple album. And then the company made him trim it down because they didn't want to publish a three-part album. So they made it a double album. But so everything he ever produced was like that. They would trim off tons of songs. And so all of these companies have songs, but then there's also a whole bunch of stuff he's never even showed anybody.
Never.
But the man must have never slept. He just wrote 24/7.
Well, I was just listening this morning, and I didn't have a chance to tape it, but Cameron Hall on MSNBC was a very, 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 very close friend of his. And I believe she was saying that when she last met him, she took him and another gentleman over to see Harry Belafonte, who had never met him. And they were in awe of one another because each one had never met each other.
Right.
And Harry Belafonte says, you know, hey, I've met everybody now.
I've met everybody now. I met Michael. I met them all. But I never met Prince. And Prince is in, complete awe of him. And the thing about it is that people don't know how much politically he was involved in different causes.
Right.
African-American causes.
He was
a really big
philanthropist.
Right, absolutely. The poor, people who couldn't make it in the business, music business, first of all, he would give them money and say, look, you can't mention my name. He would do this with other people who weren't in the business. He helped them out. He helped especially a lot of kids. Tamron said that some of the things that he would do, he would go into, this was Jimmy Jam, the one that was signed to Times. Jimmy Jam said that he would come into a city, and as soon as they put their stuff in the room, he said, look, we're going over to see these kids over at this hospital. And we went. He said, well, why'd you, so you go, Anderson Cooper asked him, I said, well, why'd you go? He said, because he's the boss. That's why.
Right.
He's the boss. He said, and you know, he fired us. He said, he fired you? He said, yeah, he fired us. He said, but he knew we could go out on our own. He told us, look, you all get, you're fired. Go out on your own. He said, well, it happened because they were supposed to do something, and they didn't do it. They forgot. He said, you guys are all fired. I'll do the show by myself tonight. He said, you don't need me anyway. Go do your own thing. He said, he didn't argue with us. He just said, you're fired. He said, I don't need you no more. He said, you guys can do what you want. He said, I asked you to do this. You didn't do it. Okay, fine. Go. It's no big deal. He said, but we were able to go out, and we did do our own thing. But Tamron Hall said that she had spoken to him Monday night when he got back from this event that he had, wherever event it was in Illinois. And she said, how are you? He says, well, how are you? And she said, well, I'm calling you. He said, I'm here. So he said, I want you to come to see my concert. I think it was Tuesday night. He was having it on Wednesday night. And she was unable to go. He said, that's the last time I spoke to him on the phone. She said, I spoke to him more. There's only one other person I spoke to than Prince more. Than Prince, and that's my mother.
Right.
He said, and when we spoke to one another, it was normally 2 hours, 3 hours. So that's how good a friend she was. He said he didn't sound like anything was wrong, but to fall out or whatever in an elevator, there had to be something a little more. You don't stop a plane. Even if it is your own plane, in the middle of its appointed route to go to the hospital, unless you are very sick. The problem is, they let him go that night. Well, it was already morning, but they let him go that night. Either there's nothing they could do, and it was very curious, and I don't want to sound conspiratorial here, but she is a newspaper person who uses and knows the choice of words. And she said, when I wish I would have went because I didn't, if I had known he was sick. Well, that's sick, I believe she said. That's sick.
Right.
So is she telling us that she knows and not telling us, or that was just a poor choice of words? We don't know. But they're supposed to have the preliminary autopsy results today.
Well, man, I know that throughout the whole month he'd been fighting the flu, quote unquote, right?
The flu.
And that he
had dehydration
and things like
everything.
That.
Everybody fights the flu.
But,
everybody's got the flu.
So I don't know if it's something like that was just, severe and he didn't take care of it enough and, succumb to it. Because the flu can kill, if you don't treat yourself. But we don't know if it's something like that, or if this is something like, he has some underlying condition like, epilepsy or cancer or something else going on. We just don't know yet.
Absolutely right. Yep. That is absolutely correct. And will we ever know? I have no idea.
Right. My only when I first heard, because he's young and being a musician, of course, lends itself to that. But when
right.
I first heard that he had died, I just was like, oh, please, God, don't let it be drugs or something stupid, because
yep.
the guy is too talented.
Yep.
You know
yep.
what I mean? And that
absolutely.
That's one of those things that almost makes you madder than anything. It's when
well, yeah,
you see the waste
absolutely.
Of a great talent. Yep.
And you never heard
so,
that of him anywhere along the line, like Michael being in a parabolic chamber or doing all these other things. You never heard any of that weird stuff from him.
Right.
And
so I'm hoping not to sound that, you know, not dying is bad anyway, but I'm hoping it's something that's
yeah.
quote unquote normal. You know what I mean?
Well, normal is
wasted.
Well, as the guy said, it's normal to die, right? So here's a little more. This was Brian Williams and Ron Mott.
For more,
talking
let's
about
start
yesterday.
Off our coverage tonight with Ron Mott. He's outside the recording complex that's parts apartment, part soundstage, recording studio called Paisley Park outside Minneapolis. Ron, good evening.
Brian, good evening to you. I suppose the best way to describe the scene behind me tonight is that this is a vigil. A lot of these folks have been standing at this fence where we have flowers and balloons for 20, 30, 40 minutes, seemingly unable to pull themselves away from this fence. Prince, of course, was a fixture here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul, the Twin Cities area. So folks have been streaming down this street all day long. The street's been closed for much of the day. They have parked across the highway and walked across this highway to come here to pay respects to a man who was an icon of this community but really belonged to the world. Over the years, he was called many things. Icon, legend, genius, even a symbol for which there was no name.
Just really good at pretending.
Tonight, a shocked and saddened musical world is calling him a lost treasure from fans outside his famous Paisley Park.
I can't believe he's gone.
To industry giants like Aretha Franklin, who spoke to Brian soon after getting the news that Prince was dead at age 57.
Prince is gone, but the music will go on.
What was it about him, do you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, young adults and adults love Prince.
TV, which came into its own about the time Prince was turning into a megastar in the early 80s, interrupted its programming. His music was transcendent, evidenced by the multicultural, multi-generational crowd that paid respects to him throughout the day and evening. But he was much more than a musician, an artist in every sense of the word, who was a masterful showman. A man who understood the business of making music and money, grappling with studios at points to carve a bigger slice of the dough and control for himself.
Who is Prince? I don't know. And that's kind of the way he wanted it.
Late last week, hours after a performance in Atlanta, during which concertgoers reported nothing out of the ordinary, Prince fell ill on the private plane ride home, which made an emergency landing in Illinois. Hospitalized, he was treated and released Saturday morning, throwing a release dance party later in true Prince fashion. But this morning, something went wrong. Medical personnel dispatched to his home and studios around 9:45 local time found unresponsive in an elevator, his publicist confirming the death a short time later. Reaction on social media, an unrelenting outpouring of grief and happier memories. Madonna, like him, known best by a single word, called him a true visionary. I'm devastated, she said on Twitter. Tonight, the Twin Cities draped in heartache and purple. And fittingly, it's been raining. Now, as you mentioned, Brian, there is speculation as to cause of death. Nothing official tonight. An autopsy is scheduled for tomorrow, and we are keeping a close eye on the gate over here to Paisley Park. We understand that his protege and former band member Sheila E. is expected to come by here.
Prince, maybe once a generation, an artist cut through like no other. Everyone was into Prince, with a range that reached the sky and chops as good as any in the business. Prince delivered us into a world that was his alone. every note of every instrument on most of his songs. Songs he wrote, songs he produced, songs that didn't sound like anyone else's. A skinny, soulful kid from Yup, Minnesota, came from the prairie and asked us to dance. We couldn't say no.
We like sexy music, and it comes out that way, and there's nothing really we can do about that.
He was born Prince Rogers Nelson in 1958 in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I've never spoken about this before.
In an interview with Tavis Smiley, he remembered being a frail and vulnerable child who found solace in music and a persona that would wow the world.
I've been having to deal with a lot of things, getting teased a lot in school. And, you know, early in my career, I tried to compensate for that by being as flashy as I could and as noisy as I could.
He made demo tapes with his cousin's band that led to his first album in 1978. He was just 19. Owen Husney was his manager at the time.
This was not some 18-year-old kid who was rebelling against his parents and doing drugs and acting crazy. This was someone who was focused and who was brilliant.
And even then, he was provocative, which he showed off in a new art form, the music video. But for Prince, sex wasn't just about shocking an audience. It was part of his artistic DNA, as he told Matt Lauer in 2004.
You know, Matt, it really just, you can't help but be sexy. I mean, it just is what it is. Sex isn't so much what you say, it's how you say it.
Little Red Corvette was his first top 10 hit. Now Prince was driving straight into our living rooms on MTV, delighting teens and shocking their parents with his evocative lyrics. Baby, have you got enough gas? While it was only 1982, the sonic visionary was already telling us how to celebrate the next millennium. Weddings and bar mitzvahs haven't been the same since.
The guy had crazy chops.
I never, ever would have believed somebody could play like Hendrix and do a James Brown split at the same time and keep playing.
Al Sharpton knows. He worked with and for James Brown for 20 years.
He said, that kid here's something different. He's something different. He's something different. And I think that he had the courage to be different and commercial at the same time. So he was different. He created a kind of genre that we've not heard, but he was able to sell it.
While he'd work with a band on tour, on his early albums, he played virtually all the instruments with full creative control.
There weren't a lot of artists who were free to say what they wanted to on record, and they were put into molds. The freedom that I had came from a long, hard fight of trying to get them to understand that I wanted to be different.
Rumors started in 1983 that Prince was making a movie. Like Elvis and the Beatles before him, he knew the power of the big screen. The result? Purple Rain.
Purple Rain really was entirely a result of Prince's own vision.
It was the vaguely autobiographical story of a musician struggling at home, falling in love, and going crazy on the stage in Minneapolis. Author Alan Light wrote the book Let's Go Crazy, Prince and the Making of Purple Rain.
He had a full game plan for how to go become the biggest pop star in the world, and he went out and executed against that. Nobody believed in it. Even the people around him thought it was nuts to try to make a movie.
Nuts, crowds loved it. And the album, with his biggest hit, When Doves Cry, sold more than 13 million copies. Prince even won an Oscar. By 1984, Prince had become that rarest of artists, with the number one album, number one single, and the number one film in the United States. Critics cracked out the word genius. Fans called him the Purple One.
It was as big as it gets.
Two years later, this.
Kiss.
Prince could do no wrong.
You could go to a song like Kiss and just say, I will blow everybody out on the dance floor in case you forgot that I'm the funkiest guy out there.
Then came the 90s, the phenomenon called Prince, soon to become the artist formerly known as Prince, went head-to-head with Warner Brothers, the record label that had signed him to a multi-million dollar contract. What did he want? He scrawled his feelings on his face.
I talked to people at his record company and what they felt about, you know, his walking around with slave written on his face at the same time as they're saying, well, you know, this guy's making millions of dollars. But Prince didn't see it in money terms.
After the split with Warner Brothers, Prince released a ton of material. He never stopped writing, never stopped working, and never stopped delivering his music straight to his fans.
Prince very clearly had a sense that I made it, I own it, I sell it, and anybody else who got involved in that had to play by his rules.
So the internet ended up, for him, was emancipation.
Absolutely.
The best ones, the artists with true talent, chart their own course, go their own way.
He lived music, breathed it. You know, it was a day in, day out passion.
Sadly, tonight, we remember what Prince wrote in his song 1999. Life is just a party, and parties weren't meant to last.
Well, that's what has been said up till now, and he had plenty of young ladies running after him. I mean, he had Sheila E.
Oh, yeah.
The first one that we know about is a Sheila E., who I was in love with.
Well, you know, he worked with so many people, and he's so prolific that I think he there's a ton of artists that owe their careers to him, basically.
You kidding me? Absolutely. I mean, Sheila E., he built everything around her, a whole genre. The glamorous
Well,
life,
all of those. Yeah, well, he had a whole
vanity.
Satellite of Vanity. He had the, yep. Even the Bangles and pop music.
Madonna.
Yeah.
He wrote the song Like a Prayer for her. And they had Carmen Electra. Electra was another one. She said she loved him. Vanity wanted to marry him. Carmen Electra wanted to marry him. Then he finally married this girl, Matea Garcia, who I don't know. That was his first wife. But they had two. One child was, I think, stillborn. The other one died just a couple of days later. And that really broke up their marriage. They were together like 5 years. And then, not 5 years. That was his first wife. The second wife, Manuela Telesino, I believe her name is, Telesio. He was together with her for 5 years. But every one of these women, every one of them has said they were madly in love with him. Not like every one of Rush Limbaugh's women that he's been married to or he paid to marry him. You don't hear a word from them. He didn't have to pay off any of his girlfriends or the wives that he married. He brought them to another level. I mean, it's you're talking about artists that he helped. I mean, as I said, Sheila E. and Vanity.
Oh yeah, but you also had tons of guys. I mean, you had Morris Day and the Time. You had other groups that he would either outright create or just really help. You know, I think he was very giving.
As a matter of fact, where is that at here? If I have that here, we just talked about the Time, and because he's one of my all time favorites. I just love that song. And, you know, when it came out, I liked Morris Day better than I liked Prince at that time. Well, hey, yeah, I was a guy, but I just love that song. Now, that's from Purple Rain. Now, the thing is that there's a lot of songs
well, you know, he
kind of
created
you know?
that almost like created that whole band as a rival band just to have for the movie, you know, even though they actually were a band and actually existed. But,
I mean, which he wrote the songs for and created, right? I mean, you mentioned it before about the Bangles. I mean, he wrote the song Maniac Monday for the Bangles.
Yeah, well, they're big hit, you know. And here's one thing to note about.
I feel for you.
There's
by Chaka Khan. He wrote that too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, Sheena Easton, Sugar Walls, all that, you know, if you go to any artist, their big hit, it's like he wrote it. But here's my sneaking suspicion.
Nasty Girl. That's right, Nasty Girl.
Well, that's one of those late night drinking songs. But anyway, here's one thing that I think is going to come out over the next several years, I'm sure. But Prince, you know, was so prolific and he helped people and did all this type of stuff. But he also had that he was a very quiet person. You mentioned earlier about, you know, how we know everything about Michael Jackson. You know, every time he ate breakfast or bought a pet, you know, it was all over the news. Whereas with Prince, you don't know anything about the man. He was a very private side, right? And so I think, and you can even see this in the ones that we know, Morris Day and Time, Sheena Easton, you know, all these people. He wrote publicly with them. But even in those cases, a lot of times if you look back on the original albums and stuff at the time, they would say things like producer or written by Alexander Nevermind or, you know, Joey Coco and all these. He had all these pseudonyms everywhere, right? And I bet you money, because they said they know about 6 or 7 pseudonyms that he used extensively. But I bet you he's got, you know, 600 of them. I bet you he's got fake names everywhere, because one of the big things he used to say is he said that ego was the main enemy in man and that you shouldn't claim everything. And there was a great quote that he had one time that he said, if you give away an idea, it's still your idea, but the fact of giving it away strengthens the idea. So I bet you money there is an entire generation of singers, songwriters, and bands out there that their music was written or helped produced by him, and nobody knows it.
Well, as one of his famous quotes is, you talk about quotes from him, it's which I have on my website, everybody should have got it, despite everything, no one can dictate who you are to other people.
Right.
That was one of his quotes. And that's what why he went and had written on the side of his face slave when he was talking about to Warner Brothers to get out of his contract. And they said, he's made millions. Why did you say we're a slave? Because he don't want you to own it. He wants to be by himself.
Yeah.
And it took him, I don't know how many years.
He didn't give a damn about the money. He was talking about the creativity and the rights to his own.
That's right. And eventually they gave it up and they gave it all back to him. So he owns everything.
Mm-hmm.
He owns everything. And you know, and of all my songs, I didn't get Nasty Girls on the Bar. I'll see if I can get it before the night is over. But what is your first recognition of him?
Well,
what's your recollection?
When he first came out, I remember the first, because I didn't hear him, unfortunately, before I saw him on MTV. And
forgot about that. He made MTV.
He's one of the first great artists. But I remember seeing him and writhing around with Wendy and Lisa on stage on that video, because you know it's one of those. It was a video, but it was made to look like it's live on stage. Prince.
Right.
And thinking, there was a couple of thoughts. One, you got to realize.
Yeah.
I'm this poor white boy from Mississippi growing up in the sticks. And it was one of those things where, you know, the Martians landed and suddenly the world's much bigger than you thought it was. And I was thinking, it was kind of one of those, what the hell is this? Yeah, yeah.
He said, well, that's going on? What the hell is this?
Right. So it was a big cultural awakening when I saw this guy. I'm like, because everything about him was different. You know, it was like, I mean, he looked effeminate. Yet he's riding around with like the most attractive girls I've ever seen in my life, and they're in lingerie, and I'm thinking, I want some of that, you know, and I'm like, what the heck's going on here, you know? So
now you have a friend down in Mississippi. What could your friend have thought about that?
Oh. Well, my friend,
black, but he looks effeminate and he's wearing stuff like that. What the hell went through his mind?
Yeah, and he dances around like in, you know, French lace and stuff. You know, yeah. You know, certain circles, that probably doesn't go over too well. They might be threatened. You know, they probably listen to songs like that and then run home and write laws to keep people like Prince out of bathrooms. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. Some of the stuff he dressed up in, you couldn't tell which bathroom he needed to belong in. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite memes. Have you seen that? This person created the Prince symbol that he did, his love symbol he was wouldn't let them use his name, Prince, you know? Well,
somebody
just posted this thing on North Carolina, said that we should put that bathroom symbol in all our bathrooms and be done with it.
Oh, hey, I got that.
And just make them unisex.
Like
yep.
I like that. Well, aren't there unisex bathrooms? I've been in them plenty of times. Hello?
No, but I'll tell you, what's that now?
I lost you for a minute there. I lost you for a minute. So aren't there unisex bathrooms? I've been in them plenty of times.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, usually they're like, they say family bathroom or whatever, you know, just like one kind of. But there are hardly any in the South. You go to Europe and stuff, and they're all unisex over there.
They're all over. Right. Well, you know, the other thing is that I see more women in the men's bathroom than I just see men sometimes, especially at the ball games.
Yep.
I mean, and then women got to complain, we don't want men in our bathroom? Oh, but you can come in ours.
Anytime there's a line in the women's room, they all bail and go to the men's room because they don't want to wait.
But why do we let them go? Why do we let them go in our bathrooms? Please.
I'd rather that all day long. I'd rather, you know, kick out all the men and just let all the women in. That'd be my favorite.
Well, here's another one. I want you to tell me what you thought when you first heard this one.
Oh,
One I'm talking about, when I saw that video, heard that song, never anything like it before. And by the way, you know, when you're a young guy, that song is like, what, 81, 82, 3, something like that, I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When that song came out, you know, I'm a young guy, young teenager. I hear something like that the first time. You know, I've never heard anybody say something like, you know, a ride so smooth, it's like a limousine. Yeah. You know. But that shit will get you laid, man. thanks, Prince.
You kidding?
So, you know.
You kidding?
Yeah, that's a game changer.
Especially if you had a red Corvette.
Yeah. But
I mean, well, forever.
Well, you know, look, but here's the thing. When I was a young guy, you know, at the same time, you had the monster of MTV was Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the same time, you're listening to, oh, I don't know, just cheesy, bad, regular music. And then you might get something like, you know, the big giant hit that everybody's singing is like Billie Jean or something. And then this guy comes along. Now, you put those two side by side.
Yeah.
They're different universes. That's two totally different things happening. And I never in my life experienced anything like that. And the passion, the sensuality, the everything too. I was like, what the hell is this? And I'm telling you, it's a game changer. That's exactly what made me wake up and pay attention to him for the rest of my life. Little Red Corvette.
Hey, that was released in 90, I think it was 99.
No,
83.
83. Yeah, it was way back. Yeah, because I was a kid.
It was
so the album name was 99.
Right, 1999.
So he came out with that album 1999, going Party Like It's 1999,
yeah.
You know. And that's
right,
what
right, right.
I think
it came
that
out
was a,
in 83.
Yeah. But that was a hit. Everybody was like, you know, the Party Like 1999, everybody's just like, oh, yeah. But when you hear Lil Red Corvette, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What did he say? Did he just say ass?
you know.
But you remember back then, that was really shocking because a lot of his albums were banned and you could not even buy. You couldn't ask for them at the record store. Everything was like secret in the back, you know, like, hey, you got to hear this thing.
But
guess what he had?
Rachel last night told Rachel about that. His albums, his records, are the reason why they produce adult music only. The stickers that were plastered all over.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first one to have them put on his. You know, the rap. He was the first one to start that.
Right. Since we're a political show that have worked on and covered these guys for years, let us not forget that the Purple One himself is the song that got Tipper Gore upset when she walked into her daughter's room and created that whole congressional hearing trying to block, ban, and codify all music and movies in America. So unfortunately, or fortunately, you know, Prince was the catalyst for that. I mean,
and
I think
when
I think you know, just like I said earlier, anybody, when you know, when you like when I'm a young kid and you walk in and you see, you know, Nikki grinding or whatever, you know, these videos, you're going, what the hell? What am I watching? What am I hearing? You know.
And you remember, Little Red Corvette was the B side of the directed release. That wasn't the number A side. That was the B side.
Oh no! Yep.
How come you don't call me anymore? It was the A side. I don't remember that offhand.
No. Well, after you hear Little Red Corvette, you don't really remember anything, Mike.
Absolutely.
It just kind of blows everything away.
Just forget it. I remember when they're going to give the police report on the preliminary results any minute now. But anyway, the thing is that I was in, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
at the Weather Service School in Kansas. And we played this place, the Adams Mark Hotel we played. Well, that's where we were staying at. Fabulous. I mean,
right.
They gave us great accomplishments. Oh man, the Adams Mark Hotel. They had a huge, huge, huge disco downstairs. The booze, and we got special treatment because we were not. Half the place was bought up by the Weather Service for all the people coming in from all across the country. And I want to tell you that. Hold on, let's see if we can bring this up here. Maybe we can hear the they're giving the police report. Let's see if we can get this first hand here. Let's see here.
I'll let him spell his name. Chief Deputy in the Carver County Sheriff's Office. James Cameron, J-A-S-O-N, K-A-M-E-R-U-D.
Can you hear that?
This is Mayor David Lotzenberger, the Mayor of Chanhassen. Chanhassen is spelled C-H-A-N-H-A-S-S-E-N. I'm the Mayor, Denny, D-E-N-N-Y. Laufenberger, Laufenberger. And this is Martha Weaver from the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office.
Good afternoon, everyone. Martha, M-A-R-T-H-A, Weaver, W-E-A-V as in Victor, E-R, spokesperson for Midwest Medical Examiner's Office.
Welcome to Carver County. I wish it was under different circumstances. This is a tragedy for all of us. To you, Prince Rogers Nelson was a celebrity. To us, he's a community member and a good neighbor. To his family, he's a loved one. In life, he was a very private person. We're going to continue to respect his privacy and his dignity and hope that you will do as well. And hope that you do as well. We also respect the media's right to information. Bear in mind that this incident happened about 29 hours ago and continues to be under investigation. There are some things regarding this investigation that I will not be able to talk about. I'm going to give you a statement, and we will then take some questions that you may have. At about 9:43 yesterday morning, we received a medical call at Paisley Park in Chanhassen. Chanhassen Fire, the Carver County Sheriff's Office, and Riskview Ambulance all responded to the call. That is our standard protocol, and it's not unusual at all for us to have everybody respond to a medical like that. They found an unresponsive male in the elevator. CPR was initially started, but was unsuccessful. He was pronounced deceased at 10:07. We have identified him as Prince Rogers Nelson, 57 years old. staff members from Paisley Park had been unable to contact Prince yesterday morning and went to check on him. They found him unresponsive and called 911. Deputies went through the building to make sure that there was nobody else inside. Because this was an unwitnessed death of a middle-aged adult, the decision was made to process the scene. That is also normal protocol. It is not different from what we normally would do. There should be no, we ended up contacting the Hennepin County Crime Lab to help us with that, and there should be no inference taken from that. It's not unusual for them to come out and do those types of calls. We finished with our processing late yesterday afternoon and turned Paisley Park back over to Prince's representatives. Again, because this investigation is ongoing, I will not be answering questions on whether or not there were any items that were taken during our processing. The Midwest Medical Examiner's Office was contacted, and Dr. Quinn Strobel, who was a Carver County Medical Examiner, responded. There were no obvious signs of trauma on the body at all. The body was transported to Dr. Strobel's office for an autopsy, and that is being done today. Results from that autopsy may take several weeks, which is not unusual. Again, this will continue to be an open investigation until the autopsy results come back, and we are ready to take questions that you may have. Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell us any more about who was in the home with Prince's
death? There were some staff members that were there that had went to check on him, and that's all I'm going to respond to with that at this time.
Is there a suicide note, Tom?
I am not responding to any kind of questions regarding what may have been taken. We have no reason to believe at this point that this was a suicide. But again, this is early on in this investigation, and it's continuing to, we'll continue to investigate.
Sure.
Okay. We have not received that information from the medical examiner's office at this time. It had not been in the couple of minutes before first responders had arrived. And it had not been within the couple of minutes before the first responders had arrived, though, with that.
You said he's a very violent person. Was he a healthy person?
I'm not the right one to answer that. We'll let the medical examiner talk about that when that time comes. I have checked calls for service that are logged for that address, as well as for in Prince's name directly. There were no calls involving Prince in the past year that we have had. Paisley Park, Prince does some concerts out there sometimes and get-togethers and so on. So it's not unusual for us to receive calls at Paisley Park itself. There was nothing that I'm aware of that involved Prince directly at Paisley Park.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Are you able to confirm whether Prince
is taking
any medication at the time of this death?
I am not able to confirm that at this time at all.
Sure, can I ask you a question over here?
Sure, sir.
What's the investigation
going to
entail now? What types of weapons are you going to
Yeah. You know, we'll be talking to people that are close to him. We'll be gathering some medical records and taking a look at those between us and the medical examiner's office and working off of them from there.
Sure. Yeah. Were they there for 24 hours?
They were trying to reach him yesterday morning and were unable to reach them. Reach Prince. So they responded to Paisley Park to look for him and found him unresponsive in the elevator.
He's still on it.
That is correct. Yeah, we did not. We did clear and go through the residents at the time and did not find anybody else there.
Okay.
Announcements and news conferences I've ever heard, and I loved the way he handled it.
And
no speculations, no, you know, nothing.
I think he knows Prince, because you could see in his face that this was not something he wanted to do.
Right.
And it says he had no obvious signs of trauma on Prince's body at all, but
yeah.
They can't say if it was Illuminati. They can't say, but I mean,
it was alien.
That was yesterday afternoon. They couldn't wait to do this to get that out.
Yep.
I mean, it's just.
But he's handling it well. They sound like they are doing a great job, and he's very respectful, very very calm, but he's thorough. He answered everything fully, but he doesn't give anything out, and he doesn't speculate, and he doesn't make any snarky comments or anything. The way he handles that.
Well, we're going to go to another one of his songs. Now, I want to know what you were doing when this was made.
Just kill those
Did we lose even you, Mike, on that one?
I'm sorry. I had me.
See,
yeah,
even
I was,
you got lost
was,
in that kid.
I was still
See?
Doing it. I got lost. It was right fourth on the all-time 150 list of the all-time greatest singles.
Oh, really?
Fourth.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that high. That's awesome.
1986.
I mean,
that song was the revolution.
That even, you know, Tom Jones had to cover it. I mean, I'm just saying.
That's right.
You know, when you got the grind there covering it, you know.
Right.
I mean,
you know,
that's
you,
awesome.
You
I know. But, you know, here's the thing about Prince. If you take that song just as a, you know, out of context, just don't think about it being Prince or anything else, but you have this guy singing in the most strange, you know, female fairy voice, and yet singing about, you know, kiss and love and everything else, and the way that it's such a, that is a perfect, that's like the epitome of Prince right there. It's so androgynous. It could be male, it could be female, it could be this, it could be that. It's everything at once, and that's, I think that's one of the few songs that captures his whole aura at once. Because a lot of times you'll have one side of him, you know, because some of his songs sound like gospel, some of his songs sound like rock, some of his songs sound, you know. But that song right there is kind of like the whole little mystery all at once. I don't know. It just cracks me up every time I hear it. Because you know my favorite part of that song? My favorite part of that song, it seems to capture the artistry of the musician at work. Because you know how we were talking about, you know, he goes at 3 o'clock in the morning and records songs, you know, and he plays all the instruments. The perfect example, in the middle of that song, out of nowhere, he goes, I think I'm going to dance now. And then he just starts playing the guitar. Bam, 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 you know. And you can just see him, like, in the studio just being, like filled with that music.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like the joy of creating. And then it's just, like, out of nowhere, it's like, I think I'm going to dance now. I love that.
Now, they have we have another one here for you. Now I know what you don't think it is, but this is this was 1984. This is off the Purple Rain album. This is off the Purple Rain album. Here it is.
We'll be right back.
When Doves Cry, hey.
Yes.
That was the 84 album Purple Rain. I never knew that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's up there. That's in the movie.
The movie.
You know?
I should have figured that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it was in the movie. Here's some other stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to tell you, that right there is my favorite Prince song of all time because it's so poignant. Yeah, it's a beautiful song, but it's very sad. And it's got so much emotion in it that's my favorite song personally of all of his music.
And Whoopi Goldberg said yesterday, she says, now we know doves are crying.
Oh.
And this song is, of course, by Prince. It was the lead single from the album, the 84 album by In Purple Rain. And it was the first American number one topping the charts for 5 weeks. It was his first number one chart-topping song, according to Billboard magazine. And it was the top-selling single of the year. And it was certified platinum by the recording industry. And shipping 2 million units to the United States. Shipping 2 million in the United States. And it was the last single release by a solo artist to receive such certification before the certification requirements were lowered in 89.
Oh, wow.
Imagine that.
So, you know, he can literally say, hey, I won it back when it was hard to win.
Yeah, and the song ranked number 52 on the Rolling Stone list of 500 greatest songs of all time.
Wow. Well, there you go.
How about that?
Yeah, that song is so beautiful to me. I just, every time I hear it, I'm just in awe.
And he said this song was inspired by Vanity. By Susan Mundy from Vanity.
Yeah.
Didn't
Vanity pass away last year or so?
Yes.
When
she matter of fact, she has to be young. Where did she die from? You remember?
I think it was drugs or something. I don't remember. I thought it was drugs, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I think it was OD. I'd have to look her up. I can't remember now.
And he says that the song was number one hit in the U.S. for 5 weeks from July 7th, my anniversary, to August 4th, 84, keeping Bruce Springsteen Dancing in the Dark from reaching the top spot when Doves Cry was voted as the best single of the year in the Village Voice, a poll. Billboard ranked it as the number one single of 1984. And the B-side was a cult favorite called 17 Days. Well, I guess I'm not into the occult, because I never heard of that. It was originally intended for Apollonia's sixth self-titled album. A 12-inch single issued in the UK included the album track, 17 Days.
Vanity died of renal failure.
That means she probably had cancer.
Well, this says she had severe kidney problems due to many years of drug abuse and was undergoing peritoneal dialysis for kidney disease. But anyway, she died from it. So she had, I guess, just damaged her body over the years.
Yeah. Well, we have a shortened show. We only have 2 minutes left. So we're going to play some more next week because I had a whole list of stuff here, but just talking about this guy, I mean, is
well, you know, you can talk about this guy for years and still have material to go through.
as a matter of fact,
an incredible force.
I want to go out with, they say it was the greatest Super Bowl performance of all time. And it happened to be in the rain.
Of course.
I will see you all later. later on the radio and on the computer, on the cell phone. And Thomas, have a good weekend. I will
see you maybe too.
I don't know. And everybody have a great weekend. Play plenty of Prince. Play plenty of Prince.
I think I'm gonna dance now.
It was like a scene.
Are you gonna dance now? Wait, that's not. Wait. That's not where. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Right here.
Relax. All right. Have a great one, Michael.
There it is. That's 1999, not Purple Rain.